Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Radio Southern Cross is back, and with me in studio now is Michael Andrew, the Pacific Media Watch contributing editor, and Rahul is with us now as well.
Hi. Cool.
So, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Weird. Talk again?
Hello.
I don't know whether that's working very well. Do you want to jump on the blue one?
Okay.
Oh, there we go. Oh, no, there we go. We're in. It's working. Cool. Easy. Panic. Over. Okay. So let's start off with Australia. Australia's Right to Know Media Industry Lobbying Group. Can you talk through that?
Yes. So this follows the recent...
Mic issues.
Yeah. Off, on.
Oh, good.
There we go.
Leave it just there. Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Go. I've angled it just right.
Lovely.
Yeah. So this follows the recent, attacks on media freedom in Australia over a number of different events, most notably the raids on the ABC headquarters in Sydney from the Australian Federal Police. And that was because they're seeking out whistleblowers and whatnot and trying to crack down on leaks within government agencies. So this media lobby, Australia's Right to Know, has basically submitted a list of recommendations for a complete overhaul of the laws to try and mitigate the what they perceive to be the attack on media freedom in Australia. So it basically, it includes 14 media companies and associations, and it addresses several key issues within the legislation, and that just the legislation needs to be more soundproof to protect whistleblowers and to prioritise media freedom in a nutshell. So that's a good
step gesture for Australia.
Yeah, and it's good they're making some noise on this, and they've got kind of got a unified front to... tell the government that what's been happening isn't acceptable, and there needs to be in a democracy there needs to be more initiative from the government level to protect whistleblowers.
Absolutely.
And to allow journalists to do the work they can do, because at the moment it's dubious. Like, if a journalist has a leaked document, the law, there's loopholes in the law that allow that journalist to be it's a criminal offence, right? So they just want to make sure, well, if you're going to leak document, that's the journalist's job to have that leaked document. It doesn't matter how he got it or how he or she got it. It's just what they need to do their job and hold the government or whoever's doing the bad stuff accountable. It's very simple. So yeah, it's good. It's a good, like I said, it's a good gesture.
Absolutely.
From the Australian media. Yeah.
Perfect. Has there been much response with the government to that? Or
well,
not really?
It's just a proposal at this stage, and it's just over the last weekend, well, the weekend and last week, so not yet, as far as I'm aware. But the ministers are actually saying, yeah, we really need more media freedom and more protection and to protect journalists, but they're not really, it's just like political talk, they're not really putting their money where their mouth is. So. It's not like it's openly condemned, like the government's not saying no, journalists shouldn't be reporting on these issues. Like, they're talking the game but not really following through. So this is trying to push
make
through
them
that.
Say something.
Make them do something a bit more solid.
Yes. So there's been a report about child violence in the Pacific. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so this was a report from a bunch of NGOs that looked at child violence across 8 countries in the Pacific. And it was reported quite heavily when the report was released. The Guardian picked it up, RNZ. And it's got some pretty startling numbers. It said there's up to 4 million children across the Pacific are suffering a form of violence at home.
Yeah.
We had some feedback from experts across the Pacific saying that number seems very high because that must be all the children in the Pacific. So we were trying to calculate that. But anyway, it's still an illuminating portrait of the situation, because child violence is certainly an issue. There are cultural There are cultural issues that, I guess, enable violence at home that need to be addressed, and it's certainly not a secret that child violence rates in the likes of Papua New Guinea are very abhorrent and very well publicised. So this recommended what needs to be done, kind of that Australia and New Zealand, the big wealthy developed countries, need to find the initiatives to address this, to actually provide the resources, the training, the education to help out. So they need to be more more involved in the very sad situation of child violence in the Pacific. So that was that report. But we'll, I think, as I said, a lot of people, well, what about the numbers seem a little bit dubious, so we'll wait and see when that gets a bit recalculated. But a startling portrait nonetheless.
Absolutely. So shall we move
questions
on to
child violence?
Yeah. No,
I'm not
just,
an expert. But
yeah, just yeah. I mean, I just think that must be tricky as well. With if there is sort of questions about how many children it is, because how can you sort of I suppose that's what you're waiting for next.
And with questions about giving aid to the Pacific, I suppose that would also have to be done in a culturally competent way and with understanding of, I guess,
how many people it actually is.
It's not just throwing money at
exactly
the issue. It's a systematic approach.
Completely.
I mean, like we have in
and
New Zealand has
exactly,
massive
yeah.
problems of domestic violence and child violence, and it's not just about welfare or trying to just throw money at it. It's about a systematic response. So as the big brothers of the Pacific, New Zealand and Australia do have a role in that, I'm sure.
Well, shall we move on to climate crisis, climate emergency, things within the Pacific leaders discussing that?
Yes, well, this is in line with your conversation with James Shaw before. So the Pacific leaders have at a forum declared a climate emergency or climate crisis, and led by Fiji's Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama, and they've basically said if Australia, again, Australia and New Zealand, especially Australia, like a big hint towards Australia, because they mentioned that coal needs to end in the region, and Australia's obviously got coal in their future. So it was a big hint to Australia that if climate change needs to be addressed in the region, then they need to lead it and they need to take more action. So it's good to have, again, that unified declaration from those Pacific leaders. But basically I said that we can't really do anything unless the big polluters do anything. It's that same old story that it's up to the big countries, the big developed countries, to really
help out those that can't.
Yeah, take a stand. And also at the Pacific Islands Forum, which Fiji has not been a part of, they've said in the past that the commitments to climate change have kind of been watered down from like the likes of Australia. So they've got these really hard, emissions commitments, and Australia have allegedly said, well, it's not that big a deal. We don't really need to have these such stringent targets. And all the other Pacific countries kind of follow suit and go, oh, okay, it's not that much of a big deal. So I guess it was a declaration for subsequent forums for Australia and New Zealand to have more of a lead and actually set some very concrete targets to achieve. Yeah, so that is on the climate change.
Some good climate change things.
There's quite a few things today, so I won't talk.
No, that's all good. So should we move on to Indigenous land struggles and media freedom in Malaysia?
Yeah, we don't cover Malaysia very often because it's overshadowed by all the other dire
horrible things
issues,
going on
by neighbouring countries like Indonesia and whatnot, but Malaysia has a very serious deforestation issue with palm oil because they're one of the leading producers and exporters of palm oil in the world, and a lot of their forest has been lost and a lot of their biodiversity, and they have part of Borneo. A massive part of Borneo is Malaysia, and that's one of the most biodiverse places on earth, but this is a story from Peninsula Malaysia. So there is a indigenous people on Peninsula Malaysia called the Orang Asli, and they're the oldest indigenous community. There's about 200,000 of them, and they're leading this active campaign against logging companies to try and stop them from accessing customary land. So this one in this place called Kampung Sungai Papan in kind of mid-Peninsula Malaysia, they put up a blockade to prevent any logging companies coming onto the land and chopping it down and making palm oil. And then this foreign journalist went and reported on it at her own discretion and was taken in by police and then arrested. Essentially, they said they were arresting her, and then they released her a couple of days later. But there were a lot of speculation that it's designed to kind of intimidate and prevent foreign journalists from covering the issue. But yeah, I thought I would give it a bit of a plug, because no one hears about Malaysia all that much, but it does seem like a very dire situation, especially if these indigenous people are the only ones fighting the fight. But fortunately, she was released after the local governor said, no, you have to let her go because we don't want this negative attention. But yeah, definitely, if you are reading news from that region, pay close attention to the deforestation struggle, because Malaysia's a beautiful country with orangutans and whatnot. It's right in the thick of things. So it's important that it gets much attention as possible.
Yeah, and that does seem sort of sad that it's only, I mean, 200,000 people seems a lot, but it's only those people really fighting for it.
Yeah.
When I'm sure hundreds and thousands of other people aren't doing anything, or the government isn't doing anything. And yeah, interesting as well, again, that journalist was released because they don't want bad press. Yeah. It's interesting that is a constant theme, that journalists are constantly released because they don't want anyone looking badly at what they've been doing.
It's a good thing that they get released, because journalists have spent years in jail.
They shouldn't be put in jail in the first place. But
best of both worlds, to both intimidate journalists but yet not get any bad press when doing so.
So this was kind of a good outcome, because perhaps if that journalist wasn't arrested, it wouldn't have got the attention it did.
True.
But I couldn't find it reported in many foreign papers. It was all domestic. So I don't know if this issue was getting much getting much press time, but
within Malaysia as well, where the media is reporting it within Malaysia.
Yeah, but Malaysia's quite far. I mean, I've been there and I've read the newspapers, and it's very pro palm oil. Like they're obsessed with palm oil. It's like it's
bringing so much money. Yeah,
yeah, but the flip side is it just loses what's beautiful about that place. And I don't think there's that much emphasis on preserving the forest and preserving the biodiversity. It's not that known that it's such a, that's what it's known for. So but good story.
Yeah, good story. Yeah, and then we'll move on finally to some PMC Ihu Matau coverage.
Yes, so we had one of our reporters, or a classmate of mine, Charlotte Muru Lanning, who went down there, and she's been covering it quite closely. And she found out through one of her contacts that the websites that the iwi who are opposing the occupation, Te Kawarau Aumaki, they had set up these Facebook pages that looked very much like Souls, Save Our Landscapes,
really?
Facebook pages. And there was a lot of criticism that that was a deliberate tactical move to kind of confuse
get people to
people
click
following
onto the wrong thing.
They both have
the
similar slogan, Protect Ihu Matau and Protecting Ihu Matau. So a bit of tactical social media there. But those pages were removed Friday morning, probably because of the criticism. A spokesperson from Seoul said, they would have been getting a lot of flack for it. And also their website when you do a Google search, it comes up first. So they obviously paid a little bit more to have it popped up. And the website itself, it kind of says, the deal we have with Fletcher's is really, really good. And it's basically lauding the relationship that the iwi have with Fletcher's, and it's doing wonders and whatnot. So kind of interesting, the politics within the
Social media.
But so she did a story on that, and I don't think anyone else covered it, but yeah, it was quite interesting to have that insight into the internal politics of the whole thing.
Yeah, fascinating. That's so tricky, using that clickbait sort of world, sort of click if you see something, because you've seen your friend say post something about Seoul on Instagram, and then you see something similar on Facebook, and you're like, oh yeah, this must be the same thing.
Yeah,
and you get led on a completely different track.
Marketing.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's a wrap.
Yeah. Well, read all about Pacific Media Centre updates at asiapacificreport.nz. Thank you so much, Michael, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
That was the Southern Cross.